Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I am your host, Joe Campanelli, and we are coming to you at a brand spanking new time, 11 a.m. Wednesdays, same day, new time. To be honest, is totally for selfish reasons that I moved the hour later, and that is so I can eat lunch at Roberta's more often. They open for lunch at 11, finishing up at 10:30 did not work for that. So I'm going to be enjoying a lot more lunches here at Roberta's. We are coming to you live in the drink every Wednesday, 11 a.m. And if you want to listen to any past episodes that at this point were all shot at 10 a.m., they are all on heritageradionetwork.org. And please do subscribe on iTunes, where you can be in a very select group of people who have left comments. So it'd be great if you can rate our show. And I would love your ratings. I say that as a select group, but I would like to grow that group. That would be awesome. Today, we're going to have a great show. I'm sorry if I'm a little rusty. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. I have been focused on opening up Altalinea at the Highline Hotel. Altalinea is an outdoor summer restaurant. And we're going to open up next week, the first week of May, and go till about the first week of October. It is a place where we focus on all things Italian aperitivi, Campari, Aperol, vermouths, all different Italian wines, small production wines, and it's in a beautiful outdoor garden. Last year, our hit drink was the frozen Negroni. We sold about 20 an hour. I've never sold that many of anything in any of our restaurants. And that is a kind of great segue for our guest. Our guest is a good friend of mine and the author of a brand new, absolutely beautiful book called The Cocktail Culture of Italy, Aperitivo. It's Marissa Huff is on the show here in the studio with us today. She is a James Beard nominated journalist and author, and she's written for La Cucina Italiana, where I was a huge fan of her work. That is an absolutely fantastic magazine. If you find any old copies, and unfortunately it's not with us any longer, it's still relevant, still great reading. La Cucina Italiana, the American version. She's also written for Wine and Spirits and The Art of Eating. She lives in Padua, Italy with her husband, and she is here in the studio with us today. Marissa, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Long intro, but I should also say that we went on this amazing trip to Italy together. We went on this crazy wild boar hunt, and then kind of on a whim, we decided, along with two other friends, to go to Venice. And I was anti going to Venice because I had a not great time. And you're like, trust me, like, I know all the good spots. And you changed my mind. I was like, wow, Venice is great. Completely on your recommendations of where to go.
Well, thanks, Joe. I'm glad you had a good time.
That was a really fun trip. So, Marissa, I know that years ago you wrote a beautiful article in La Cucina Italiana on aperitivo. What made you want to dive into write an entire book on this?
Well, actually, it was the publisher, Rizzoli, who approached me after that article came out. And I didn't have time at the time. And a number of years later, they came back to me and said, I think you should do this. I think that there's a market for it. And I said, all right, let's do it. And that was probably 3 years ago. So we finished up the book last summer, and here it is today.
It's about a two-year process, huh?
This was. I do have a full-time job, so this was something I had to do on the side and dedicate the time to on the weekends. There was a lot of travel involved, exploring the cities of northern Italy and visiting all the places that I wanted to find recipes to take inspiration from. And then also, all of the photos in the book were shot on site. So my photographer, Andrea Fazzari, came to Italy twice, and we toured around to get all of the photos taken.
Wow. And so, you're by all means a wine expert, Italian food and culture expert, and also a cocktail expert. What did you find was most surprising in this process? What did you learn that you hadn't expected?
Oh, let me think about that one.
Why don't you think about it, and let's tell people what aperitivo is first. Because I realized that we didn't do that. Like I said, I'm a little rusty. Let's explain just like what this aperitivo culture is all about.
Okay, so I guess that a lot of people like to compare it to a happy hour, meaning it's the time of day, usually post-work, that people get together, generally in a piazza or, during the summer they'll be outside or in a bar, and have a fairly light cocktail before dinner. Aperitivo, the word, it refers to the drink itself, but also the getting together, the social hour. It differs from happy hour here in the States because you're not going to get a drink for less and, $1 tacos or buffalo wings as a side, but rather you may end up even spending more money. And with that, you have, in places like Milan, a buffet of food. Or in Venice, the aperitivo culture is a little bit different. And you will spend not very much on wine, because wine generally isn't that expensive there. And you can buy separately what they call cicchetti, which are like Venetian tapas, is the way people like to describe those. So it's...
I fell in love with aperitivo studying abroad in Florence, where I guess the culture of it isn't quite as strong as it is up north. But I found that this was a way, as a student, I can, number one, get a pretty cheap meal, because I would, you buy one drink and you can generally eat as much as you want for free and try not to like completely look like I'm just eating all the food. But two, actually experience a pretty real, authentic Italian experience, where there is a way, as like a young student who was somewhat, shy about meeting Italians, was able to actually hang with Italians. So they seem so much cooler than me, and just like this, like effortlessly, this is their time of hanging out, and it was really fun.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. In fact, at some point they unfortunately coined the term apericena, which was the aperitivo and cena, meaning dinner, joined together, this compound word that is basically that's what you were doing. You were going out. You're supposed to be in the guise of having an aperitivo, actually just, going crazy and eating dinner because you're filling your plate multiple times with all-you-can-eat buffet. There's been a little bit of a change in more recent years in Milan, where this kind of thing really took off, and a move back towards a little more civilized approach, where the bar may serve you a single plate with some different bites on it, just to make it, a little bit...
Less of a free-for-all.
But then there's also
I probably single-handedly changed that rule. I changed the culture for it, putting more restrictions on the amount of food that people can eat.
Yeah. And then the whole sense that it doesn't have to cost that much. In some places you will find really designer cocktails, and you pay for them because there's the beauty of the recipe that they came up with and the ingredients that they're using, and it's been masterfully mixed. But something like a spritz, where you really is just, toss three ingredients together and stir it with some ice and maybe drop in a slice of orange and an olive. In places like Venice and Padua, you might spend less than you would for a glass of water on that spritz, which is just incredible. So in Padua, it's the town where I live, you have the second oldest university in Italy. And thousands of students that flood the piazzas and are sipping on these neon colored drinks. I remember an article that came out in Vanity Fair, I believe, and they named Padua the public drinking capital of the world.
Wow.
Yeah, just because you get there and it's just everyone's out there sipping on these things.
And it's mostly at aperitivo time.
Absolutely.
Spritzes.
Absolutely.
Spritzes.
Spritzes. There is also a big wine culture. Mm-hmm. So you'll find that there are some wine bars where people would prefer to drink wine, sparkly wine, or, you know, a light white wine. But especially among the student population, spritz is the thing.
And when we say spritz, it's like, is it fair to say it's like 99% Aperol spritz? Like,
yes. Nowadays, that's the case. Aperol, which is also from Padua, has invested a whole lot of money to make that the word spritz equivalent with Aperol. Once upon a time, and I'm talking probably 10, 15 years ago, you're just as likely to find a spritz made with Campari, or in Venice, a spritz made with Select, which is a more Campari-like bitter liqueur that's red as well, that's from Venice. But these days, yeah, Aperol
spritz. And you talk in the book a little bit about just the general history where that northeastern area was controlled by the Habsburgs, and they liked their wine spritzers.
Absolutely.
Right. But then at some point that changed from like a wine spritzer to a bitter.
Exactly. So the Italianness of it was when they added the bitter component to it, because originally it was just wine sparkling. Well, actually, no. Originally, they it's believed that it could have been sparkling wine with just regular water, that the sparkle came from the wine itself and not from the soda water being added. Later on, the Italians added the bitter component. To this day, however, if you visit a place like Trieste, up in the really very close to the Slovenian border, there where there was a huge Austrian influence, you order a spritz, and they generally will take it to believe that you're ordering a spritz bianco. So that's bianco meaning white, and that's without a bitter. So it is just white wine and soda water with a slice of lemon.
Huh.
Delicious in the summer when it's really hot.
That sounds delightful.
Yes.
Oh my God. And then you see that Aperol is talking a lot about this like 3-2-1 recipe. Is that, I always find that like when I make spritzes, I don't measure it. I think most cocktails, like I'm really, anal about the bartenders jiggering everything out, but it seems like that is a recipe that you can kind of do a little more haphazardly.
That's true. And it's very un-Italian to measure things out.
Yes.
So I think that you're right to just kind of take things in and pour them in, and you can eyeball it. You can also just play around and see, what you like, and you can cater it to yourself. You don't have to be that precise. I think the 3-2-1 came along because they just wanted something that was easy to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I once read that each sort of town has a different ratio that they like to go by. That seems, do you agree with that?
I don't believe I found that. I also am not the biggest spritz drinker. I must admit.
Well, what's your aperitivo drink of choice?
It was Negroni until I got pregnant and had a baby, and I can really, one Negroni would put me on the floor. So now I really like Americanos, because it's just a lighter version, and you still have the Campari and the vermouth together, which I think is a great combination.
Okay, so an Americano is a Negroni with soda water, and the precursor to the Negroni. And I do want to talk to you about the Spagliato, which is maybe my favorite variation, which is the Negroni with Prosecco or sparkling white. Well, it's Prosecco instead of gin. The story that I have read and that I have told countless times to guests, to staff that I'm training, is the story that I've read, which is that some bartender in a busy bar haphazardly grabbed a bottle of Prosecco instead of gin. And the guests were waiting a long time, and they're like, it's okay, we'll take it, and they ended up loving it, and so they called it the Spagliato, the mistaken one. It seems so unlikely to me that someone could mistake a bottle of Prosecco for a bottle of gin with the cage, and it has to be cold and all that.
Italians are great storytellers. So, what I've been told directly from the source is that the Negroni Spagliato was created by Mirko Stocchetto, who is the owner and former bartender at Bar Basso in Milan, which is this great old school bar, all wood paneled with crystal chandeliers. And he claims that it wasn't the bartender's error necessarily in grabbing the bottle from the wrong spot, but the person who actually stocked the bar put a bottle of Prosecco in the place where he normally would grab for gin. But yes, of course, like the shape of the bottle itself, you would have imagined that he would have caught on before he actually poured it. But it makes for a great story, and he's now famous, so that works out well.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it kind of it does make for a good story, and you can picture it happening, and that whole interchange, and now it's this classic drink. But then when you think about it, you're like, wait a second.
Well, you have to make sure you make a trip to Milan and go to Barbasso. You know, if you're interested in Italian culture, that's, you know, a must do. His Mirko's son is now kind of running the show, Maurizio, and he is a hoot. He spent some time living in Berkeley and really will come up with some great stories for you as well.
And a lot of the places that you cover in your book, they have very either classic drinks or very like small variations on classic drinks. Are you finding that Italy's cocktail culture is changing and sort of mirroring America's in any way?
That is happening, especially in larger cities like Milan, Rome, and even Turin. Italian bartenders will go abroad, spend time in London, New York, some even in Paris, and learn what's going on currently in the, you know, modern cocktail culture, and then come back and try to apply what they've learned to these delicious Italian ingredients. So there are a number of bars. And in the back of the book, there are listings of places to go where you can find some of these really, really cool things that are happening in Italy today. You know, Italians aren't really big into cocktails as, you know, a general rule, because the cocktails are considered something that are probably fairly, you know, strong in alcohol, whereas they prefer something that's a little bit lighter, especially before dinner. There is change.
Yeah. Italians like to be able to drink for a long time without getting drunk.
Yes, I'd say that's true. Yeah, that's why you eat also while you drink. That helps.
And on that note, we're going to come back and talk about some of the bites that accompany aperitivo just after the short break.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
The one and only Dave Arnold brings the noise to Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday on Cooking Issues.
Coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn!
If the bomb was going to drop, and you only had 15 minutes, which is like, I can make a sandwich in 15 minutes. You'd be eating a sandwich.
I'd kiss my wife, make a sandwich.
If you believe that it's all about to be over, why eat healthy? I'm not a freaking Neanderthal. I like a tempered ice cream sandwich. But it's the only way to get around it if you're a party master, because you're going to wind up, like, your kitchen's going to fill with dishes.
And some people have commercial dishwashers in their house.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
I've seen them.
Who?
Really rich people.
For more mile-a-minute knowledge from Dave and the crew, listen to Cooking Issues, available on Heritage Radio Network, iTunes, and Stitcher.
All right, we're back on In the Drink with the author Marissa Huff, one of my good friends. She has an absolutely beautiful book, the seminal book on aperitivo. It's called Aperitivo, The Cocktail Culture of Italy. Before the break, Marissa was mentioning a little bit of the bites, and something that I find that I say when I'm describing Italian wines to people is that Italians don't like to drink unless they have a little bit to eat, and they don't like to eat unless they have something to drink. And with that, Marissa has some absolutely fantastic recipes that are relatively easy to produce at home, cost not too much to make, and they're recipes from actual places that do aperitivo in Italy. Were there any themes around what you saw at aperitivo spots, places that actually cared a little bit?
Well, there, I think that with this, there is also a sense of regionality. Mm-hmm. You know, the book itself is divided. The chapters are different cities in northern Italy, for the most part. But then we have a mini chapter on Rome and Florence, and also Portofino and Liguria. And so you'll see the regional differences that you see in normal food for dinner, also, you know, like the wines and things like that also is a part of the aperitivo scene. I think generally speaking, you know, you can across the board, you will find things like crostini pretty much everywhere. Maybe just the toppings will change. Fried food is always a great thing. Usually you eat it with your hands. It makes you want to eat more. Whets your appetite. Makes you want to drink more. Yeah. So in Venice, something fried would probably be like sardines. I have a recipe for fried sardines, fresh ones, and with what they called a salsa ruggine, so a rust sauce, which is like a mayonnaise, a little spicy mayonnaise. Absolutely delicious. Milan, you might have some fried meatballs. I mean, there are just plenty of things to go around. Or croquettes of different sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. And going back to the drinks and kind of transitioning over to wine a little bit, I know that Prosecco is something that you see kind of all throughout. Wine in Italy is generally pretty hyper-regional, where people just drink what's from their area. But Prosecco is something, is it fair to say that that's all over Italy?
Yes, you can find it all over Italy, that's for sure. But also more recently, you'll see that there are wine producers who are interested in making sparkling wines of their own, and not necessarily in the Charmant method, but in the Metodo Classico, or the Champenoise method. So you're finding champagne-style wines, meaning, you know, the secondary fermentation actually happens in the bottle, in coming from places like Sicily, and not just the more traditional sparkling wine areas like Franciacorta or Trentino.
Right, and yeah. From indigenous grapes also.
And from indigenous grapes, absolutely. Which is super cool. Yes, that is a
so really you see
cool
Nerello Mascalese in Sicily, Erbaluce in Piedmont.
You've got it.
I love those wines.
Yeah, they're really great.
I think they're great, and they represent a good value versus Champagne or Franciacorta.
Yep.
Yeah, what are some of the ones that you're excited about when you bring it up? Is there any particular...
Oh, that's hard for me right now.
Okay,
I've had a year off. I've had a year off drinking, Joe.
You're pregnant. You just came to the States. New baby. Woke you up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Well, I can say I really like Ferrando makes an Erbaluce, a sparkling Erbaluce that I think is delicious, and for a really, really good value, Murgo Etna Rosato is like maybe $20 a bottle retail.
Well, one that just came to mind, I don't know if you can get it here, is, you know, Eddie Conte makes Cappa Cappa, which is really a lot of fun
from the
Carso area. You know, it's a part of Italy that. It's very dear to my heart. I know that Benjamin Ziderich was recently on your show.
Yes, one of your good friends. Yeah, thank you for setting that up.
No, it was my pleasure.
Very, very sweet. Yeah, and that wine, it's so leasy, but also so much acidity. It's like round, like, oh, this is round on the nose, and then boom, it's like super bright. And I absolutely love that wine. And then I think we're finding, maybe it's just I'm having a little bit more of an interest. I had no interest in Prosecco for a very long time.
Yeah.
At all. But
you're
now,
not the only one, but I think that there are interesting things.
Couple of things.
Well,
like
there's
the whole
like colfondo movement. So, you know, on the lees.
Yes.
And those are really kind of funky and fun. And they're, you know, light, really light and easy to drink and kind of not what you expect.
Right.
For Prosecco,
I like those.
To be.
And
those
they're a little
really
cloudy
great.
And they can
Absolutely.
Be super dry.
Yeah, there's some sediment in there. That's really great.
Yeah. Are those just for export wine geeks like areas, or are people in Italy actually?
No, people in Italy are definitely drinking them, but especially in the Veneto region where they're being made. There's a producer, he also owns a wine bar in Venice, Mauro Lorenzon. And he is, I think, probably in part responsible for the return of these type of cloudy Proseccos and pours a whole lot of it at his bar.
Interesting.
La Mascheretta. Yeah.
La Mascheretta is the bar. And his label is called, is his name?
You know, no, it's not his name. I'm blanking on it right now.
Okay.
But if I come up, I'll let you know.
Okay, so a couple of the ones that we pour at Altolini are Casa Costepiane.
Yes, I know them.
Really
good. Yeah, they're great.
Vigna di Alice, which I don't know if they
familiar with them.
Have a colfondo. And then Vigna di Iseppo, Sui Leviti, which is...
Sui Leviti, yeah, on the lees.
On the lees. These are cool. I never thought I'd be that excited about Prosecco, but these are, I think, some really interesting Prosecco.
I think Costa di La, I believe, is Mauro Lorenzon's label.
Costa di La, yes. Yes, okay. That's, yeah, yes. So I working, think that's with Jenny and Francois here in the States, and that's okay. Delicious wine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in terms of local wines, do you see local wines during aperitivo? Or is it really about the cocktails during this time?
No. Wine is, you know, is a big part of it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that you can mix and choose, and there you might be in company where someone's having a cocktail, and you'll be having a glass of wine. That's not a big deal. No.
In the perfect Italian, no, it's not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
You have what I want, you have your want. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. But the big deal is that you make sure that you know, there's the cheers ahead of time before you take your first sip. Make sure that you cheers with your buddy, but you say chin chin rather than cheers in Italian.
You say chin chin. And you must. Not salute.
You can get away with salute. That's
but
fine,
chin-chin.
Too.
And chin-chin. Then are there other rules around cheers?
Well, absolutely. You have to look at one another's eyes, you know, interlock and lock eyes. Otherwise, the saying goes, it's 7 years bad sex, which, you know, for the Italians is worse than death. And another one is never cross arms. So if you're reaching out to cheers with someone across the way, make sure that you don't cross over someone else's arm, because once again, 7 years bad sex. So very serious stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And so you'll see Italians actually really be intentional about this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very intentional, and then also just, you know, look, give you the real hairy eyeball if you happen to, you know, make the faux pas of reaching out and crossing arms.
Yeah, I imagine almost that the crossing arms is worse than the eyes, because if you miss the eye thing, then it's your own fault. But if you cross the arm, the two people are implicated in that.
Right? Yeah, it's so true. ruin life for everyone.
Yeah, that's... That's intense. So have you had any time to think about what was surprising about what you learned that you didn't think that you would know, other than particular recipes? What about this culture? That's a handsome picture.
Yes, isn't it?
What about the aperitivo culture did you learn that you didn't necessarily know ahead of time?
I think that, you know, just that it is so, such a big deal, meaning people do it all over the Northern Italy, and it is such a special moment for everyone to get together. I think that everyone should do it too, and we should bring it here to the States.
I think so too. Absolutely. I think so too. So it's an Italian's day. Like, you get up, you go to your bar, right, which is your coffee shop.
Correct.
Stand and have a drink, probably standing, have an espresso or cafe, as they would call it.
Yes.
Get into work like 9:30.
It depends. I mean, yes. I think that's generally speaking, that's pretty fair. Yeah.
Leave at noon for a 2-hour lunch.
Well, come on. I don't know that we could all. I don't know if we could all have that luxury, but you know, ideally that would be the case. Yes.
And then
go back to work, work some more.
Go back to work, work some more, and then leave at like 6 for aperitivo.
Nah, maybe 7. 6:30, 7. It depends. You know, I think that the other thing is that, you know, the happy hour, I think generally in the States starts a little bit earlier than, let's say, the aperitivo does in Italy. You know, you may even go and play a soccer match before you go out for aperitivo if you have the time or something like that. Go home and relax and then head out again.
So I have this idea that perhaps in Italy, lunch hours are shortening and they're kind of...
Aperitivo hours are...
Aperitivo is why... Like, they're making up for it at the end of the day. Is that
like,
true?
In cities like Milan, that's absolutely the case. I mean, these are working cities.
Yeah.
You don't have the 2-hour, 3-hour lunch that, you know, people like to imagine are going on.
Right.
In Italy, but
it doesn't happen in Milan.
Not really.
In smaller cities, maybe?
In most smaller cities, or also depends, like, you know, what kind of job you have. You know, if you're entertaining wine geeks from the U.S. and, you know, you're a winemaker, yeah, you probably do have the luxury of sitting down to the 3-hour lunch, and because, you know, you're working. You're talking about wine. You're drinking wine.
All right. Well, I encourage everyone to read the aperitivo book. Imagine yourself in Italy as you're doing it, sitting down to a 2-hour lunch and a 3-hour aperitivo.
There you go.
And it's pretty easy to transport yourself there. The book is absolutely beautiful. The history in it here is great. The cocktail recipes and the food recipes are easy to do at home. I just think an aperitivo party would actually be like a good party, because the stuff is good at room temperature. It doesn't cost a lot to produce. It's not difficult to produce, because a lot of times places are giving it away for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So have an aperitivo party and invite me over. Thanks so much for listening, Marissa. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show, and congratulations. I love this book.
Thanks so much, Joe.
All right. This has been In the Drink on Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank everyone from Heritage Radio, including Jack, Aaron, David, and goodbye to Allison, who is recently left. We'll miss you a lot here. All right. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.